So we are thrilled to have with us in the studio Nick Kristof, New York Times columnist, and Cheryl Wudunn, former New York Times correspondent. All reporters have notebooks. I gather you two have notebooks, right?
We have lots of them.
Right, exactly.
Boxes of them.
And often the idea of a reporter's notebook is the notion of a kind of an off-the-cuff briefing about things that you've observed in your travels. Well, first of all, your travels are extensive, which probably explains why you have so many notebooks, correct? But in this particular case, in a piece in the New York Times Magazine yesterday, you really, in a very compelling way, gave us a kind of deep reporter's notebook of all the things you've observed in essentially your careers as journalists. And it all sort of focused on one really important issue, the moral and political plight of women around the world, that it seems to be, from your view, at the nexus of political instability and economic instability. It was a very, very compelling argument. How did this begin to occur to you, Nick?
This was something that grew on us really from the time when we were correspondents in China in the late 1980s. And it seemed, first of all, to us that this is really the premier moral imperative of our times, that there are tens of millions of women and girls who go missing because they are discriminated against to death. And it's hard to see any kind of moral challenge that is equivalent. And secondarily, just in our travels, it seemed to us that those countries that were more effective in fighting poverty and creating stability were those that actually educated and empowered women, and that those that didn't were those that were most prone to instability. And that gave us a real interest in addressing this.
Political equality for women as a marker for the sign of sort of advancement as a civilized nation, that's a controversial argument to make even today, isn't it?
Oh, it certainly is. But, you know, beyond just political equality, what we are talking about is just basic equal human rights. If you don't educate and empower women, you just can't begin to tackle poverty and extremism, and we can't advance U.S. interests throughout the world. It's kind of strange that we can put a man on the moon, but we can't treat women as human beings.
And we haven't even put a woman on the moon yet either, so we should note that. Well, how do countries deal with these issues in your travels, as you've observed it? I mean, in Darfur, in China, in South Asia, how do these nations in different ways grapple with the issue of either suppressing women or trying to bring equality and human rights to women without creating political instability in the country?
Well, of course, there are varying degrees. In many cases, women are just absolutely neglected, so that women die early, needlessly, in childbirth because there's no attention to care for them. In a place like China, in contrast, a century ago, it used to bind the feet of women. Now, partly because it allowed girls to get educated and it allowed girls to go into the workforce, which is very important. Look at their economy right now. Women helped jumpstart the entire economic juggernaut of China because they were allowed to work in factories.
How does economic empowerment of women have a dimension on reducing abuse? You tell a story of a woman in Pakistan who received a microloan that had all kinds of implications.
Right. And we've seen this over and over. But, I mean, that woman's story, I think, is fairly representative. Her name is Saima. I met her in outside the city of Lahore in a slum. She was very poor family. She, unfortunately for her, had given birth to two daughters, which created tremendous resentment in her family. Her husband was beating her every day. He was a gambler. The family was in debt. Her mother-in-law was suggesting that her husband get another wife who might produce sons. And at that point, she got a $65 micro loan and started an embroidery business. And she turned out to be brilliant at embroidery. She started hiring other people in the village and eventually hired her husband. And this really and it changed the dynamics in the family and in the village. You know, now there's no talk about getting another wife, and she's educating her daughter so that they're going to have an entirely different future.
Great story, but is it scalable up?
It does seem to be. And Bangladesh is an example of scalability. If you compare Pakistan and Bangladesh, then there are some reasons for their different outcomes. But one is microfinance and one is educating girls. And today, because of that, Bangladesh is stable and has a much better future than Pakistan does.
Wow.
Nick and Cheryl, you work together. You also live together because you're married. How does that make an impact on what you do around the world? Are people looking at you as role models? Does it help or hinder your work?
Well, I would think that it certainly helps. I mean, I think actually the challenge is if you can raise kids together, then writing a book is really easy.
So. No kidding.
The book doesn't play you off each other.
I second that one, yeah. That's amazing. Well, you know, one of the interesting things here about your work is that, you know, if you look historically at when women have sort of gone from being, you know, suppressed to empowerment, if you look at Europe at the end of the 1800s and the early 1900s, it caught fire very, very quickly. The women's suffrage movement was a dramatic change from the Victorian era. Do you think the possibility of women's empowerment catching fire as a global political movement is possible in our era?
Oh, I certainly do. I think that we're at a tipping point right now. And certainly within the country, the feel is like that, not only in the political sphere with the new appointments with the Women for Global Issues in the State Department with Hillary Clinton marshaling this idea, but also in the business sphere. You've got corporations now taking on this issue in their corporate responsibility areas and in the civilian population.
In Darfur, if women were more in control, would that have an impact on the genocide there? You've called it genocide.
Yeah. And look, I mean, there's no – women aren't a magic bullet, but it is generally true that those societies where women are more marginalized, and that certainly includes Sudan, those are the ones that are more likely to have civil conflict and indeed genocide. And so I think that, you know, more broadly, educating girls, bringing them into the labor force not only increases economic growth but does provide greater stability.
Well, and all of these issues will be the subject of your forthcoming book, Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide. The related article was in Sunday's New York Times Magazine. Nick Kristof and Cheryl Woodun, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks
very
so much.
Nick Kristof is New York Times columnist, Cheryl Woodun, former New York Times correspondent.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.